Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
The Andy J Podcast. The Andy J Podcast. The Andy J Podcast.
Hey, welcome to the very latest episode of the Andy J Podcast. Now, we have been bringing you so many episodes recently, and I got to tell you, I'm really, really pleased to be able to welcome today's guest. Now, he might not be a household name, but I'm telling you, he has been in so many shows and movies that you have seen, and if you just quickly Google search him, he's one of those people that you go, oh, that guy! Oh, of course! What I'm also prepared to say is he is such great company. I mean, honestly, I started chatting. His name's James Lance, by the way. He's a wonderful actor, just getting that out from the front. James Lance, the actor, is my guest today for a whole hour in conversation with him. And he is brilliant, brilliant company. I hadn't met James before. I wasn't sure what to expect, but I was aware of lots and lots of his shows, and he's been in everything. I can also tell you, you are in for a real treat with a couple of particular anecdotes. One of them about Joanna Lumley is, well, I love it. I've thought about it often since he shared it with me. Another is from the film Bronson, where he starred opposite Tom Hardy. And oh my, it is worth its weight in gold. So those moments in particular are glorious. Then there's plenty of other things about his approach to life, which I love. He's a guy I want to be friends with, actually, because he's just a really interesting, happy, oh, it's a ray of sunshine. Look, enjoy this. It's going to make you smile, probably for the whole hour. Have a lovely experience. Thank you so much for choosing the Andy J Podcast. It is greatly appreciated. If you like what you hear, tell your friends, subscribe. We've got Harry Redknapp tomorrow. Oh, yes. Yes, that's right. King of the Jungle, managing legend, Harry Redknapp himself. He's on the show tomorrow. But for now, enjoy James Lance.
The Andy J Podcast.
My guest right now, I am so pleased to welcome him. You will know him from super movies such as Bronson and Northern Soul, and incredible television like Ted Lasso, Hotel Babylon, Pennyworth, Teachers, Alan Partridge. He's only got a new movie out as well. He is the actor that I would have to say has the greatest hair in the world. It is the marvellous James Lance. How are you doing, James?
Wow, what an introduction. Thank you very, very much. And my hair is also sending you much love for the recognition.
It is my Hi. It's my favorite hair on planet Earth, James. How do you do it? And please tell me it's all your own.
I have a myriad of wigs that in the basement that I steal from people when I'm out and about. It is my hair. It is my own hair, it seems, and it's remaining. It's sticking with me. It's like I'm in a double act these days.
It's, I mean, in the new movie, which we'll come on to talk about, Me, Myself and Die, your hair, yes, it's almost like a secondary character. It is so remarkable. I mean, it is amazing hair.
I know what you mean. It's like I'm the ventriloquist dummy, and the hair is sort of operating me, it seems.
What I find brilliant, James, is that in recent times, recent shows and movies that you've done, you've had, which obviously is your natural, you've had this kind of little grey streak over on the sort of left, which has become slightly more pronounced as your hair's got longer and so on. and your art department haven't said, oh, we'll just get you some Just for Men. They've let you go with it in every show. It's great.
It's strange, isn't it? Yeah. What seems to happen quite often is that because I'm working on one project and then there's another one, I sometimes have had to kind of keep it long, and then it's continued on, if you know what I mean, because of continuity of jumping between projects. So it's kind of, it slipped through the cracks of the hair and makeup department, who quite often would like to get their hands on it and sort it right out, to be honest with you.
You have done very well keeping it in.
Thanks.
I've only acted in one thing in my entire life, which was Dez, okay. the ITV drama with David Tennant and Daniel Mays. Yes. And I had a tiny little role, and I was the reporter on it. And at the time, I had quite huge hair, sort of akin to yours in the new movie. It was sort of massive, and they really went for it, and they gave me this 80s lop, and I didn't know that's what actors did. I thought you all wore wigs. I just thought that was what it was. So I was very surprised that my rock star haircut got utterly obliterated just to play, you know, 5 minutes of telly. I was like, wow, all right, fair enough.
Yes, that is one of the, I'm afraid that happens. I sympathise. At least it grows back, of course.
Well, yes.
Were you in a scene with Danny Mays?
I was in a scene. Yeah. I had several scenes. I was quite fortunate. I was in all three episodes. And
brilliant.
Danny, what a star! What a lovely,
He's
lovely
amazing.
Man. Yeah.
He's an amazing man. I did a series with Danny called Top Buzzer many years ago, just before his career really took off, and he's just a mega talent. He's a beautiful human being. I love him.
Yeah, he's very cool. Mm. He's been on this show and the audience loved him as well, because he told a great yarn. You know, he's
Yeah. He's the real deal. He's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
He's as good a company off screen as he is, you know, on the radio, as it were. And I loved him for that. In fact, sorry, James, we're talking about someone else here. Sets the standard for which I expect you to live up to, James. He told us this wonderful anecdote about how he froze on stage at the National in front of, I wish I could remember which director it was. It was someone akin to Spielberg, and it was this massive talent who was there. And he was like, "Yeah, I died. I had 2 minutes where I couldn't remember a single word." And it was a lovely story.
Oh wow! Oh, that's the ultimate nightmare. That one. Yeah.
Well, do you ever get that? Because correct me if I'm wrong, James, but the majority of your acting career is in TV and movies. You're not so much a board treader.
It has mainly been on screen. You're right. I have done a fair bit of theatre as well, but it is mainly on the screen. Indeed, you're right.
And is that a conscious thing, James? Because, as I say, not an actor, don't quite understand how any other company or business works. Really, you only live in your own shoes, don't you? But as an actor, you sort of sometimes assume that you get to sort of pick and choose. You kind of go, oh, well, I'm going to be a TV actor, or I'm going to be a movie actor, or I'm going to be just the theatre, or whatever it might be. But you're at the top. You know how it works. What's it really like? What is a day-to-day life for an actor?
Crikey. Well, a day-to-day life as an actor is not working, I would say, most of the time, and thinking how to, you know, trying to kind of maintain your mindset so that you're ready when the phone does ring or the email pings. Of course, I have no idea what's going to come in. I have absolutely no idea at all whatever medium it's going to be in, you know, from film, TV, radio, stage. But I like that about it. You know, that's for me, that's part of the thrill in you just never know where you're going to be, who you're going to be playing, who you're going to be playing with. I love that part of it. You know, it's akin to life itself, really.
But does it also have, because I hear what you're saying, it is that you get the highs with it, but does that also mean there's a state of sort of mild anxiety when the phone's not ringing and wondering how sort of long it's going to be? I mean, you're not a man, I'm very familiar with your CV, you're not a man who's long between jobs traditionally. You seem to kind of go from one show to another show to another show. You're regularly booked, but there must be occasions in every actor's life where it's been a couple of weeks and you start to think...
It may appear like I go from one show to one show, but that isn't how it is at all. No, I've had huge swathes of time with absolutely nothing. And it's probably the longest amount of time I've not worked. It might be about a year or even 9 months. I know there was a few periods like that. Or you might have a couple of years that are just really fallow, where you just only get a couple of gigs over those years that, you know, for whatever reason, aren't particularly well paid or, you know, particularly great. You're at the mercy of the flip side to what I was just describing being the thrill of it. There's also, like everything in life, there's some drawbacks and benefits. And the drawback is you just don't know what's going to come up next. Like right now, I've just finished working and I have no idea what I'm going to do next other than mow the lawn. That needs doing.
Well, and that's an important role. So
Indeed. And it's a role I take very seriously, Andy. Now, why not?
It's fascinating to hear you say that, James, because if you don't mind me saying, you strike me as being an actor that is always in demand, and the roles you get. Let's talk Ted Lasso, for example, the Apple TV series, which is just a piece of joy. I mean, it is a lovely, lovely television show. It's just, it makes, it's feel-good TV. And your character, Trent, is just, I mean, hilarious and kind of there as the sort of nefarious mixer-upper challenger, but with a heart of gold. And it's such a distinctive character. You are so memorable. And that's what I mean, is you get these roles that really punctuate shows. You're brought in, come on, it's time to wheel out James Lance. This scene needs a bit of oomph. Let's get James Lance in it. Do you see what I mean? That's how it appears to me.
Well, that's so interesting to hear you say that's how it appears, because I have no idea of those things. And the idea of wheeling me in and for a bit of oomph, it's long may it last, right up until the retirement home. I don't know how to answer that, really, other than to say it really isn't like that for me. I have no idea what's going to happen, I think the thing is that I've been extremely lucky in my career, because I've managed to continue working, and that in itself, for any artist, actor, is an incredible thing, because if you look at the statistics of actors working, it's really, really frightening. For instance, if my little boy said to me that he wants to be an actor when he grows up, I would genuinely really, really try and encourage him to get a few other things going on in his life as well, because it's just such an insecure profession. And with that instability, obviously, becomes, that resonates all the way out. So you just, you may get to the point where you can't pay your bills and then this, that, and the other. And so it's you're on a bit of a knife edge. And when I was a little boy, people always used to say to me, what do you want to be when you're older? And I was like, I'm going to be an actor. And they would just laugh and say, yeah, but what are you going to do really? And I was like, I'm going to be an actor. And then I remember the stock sort of phrase that would always come back to me was, well, you better find something to fall back on. Right. And I, in my young mind, didn't understand why they would say that. And I actually wish somebody had explained that to me. And if I do work with younger actors, I now explain it to them. In fact, I was just working with a couple of wonderful young actors playing my sons in something. And I explained this to them, is that the reason, people say you need something to fall back on is because of the insecurity of, you just never know when you're going to work. And if you have got something that you can do as well, it will only benefit your acting career. And I always took it that you had to do one or the other. And I think in this day and age, you can do quite a few different professions at the same time. And if you can do that, then you're going to relax a little, which is only going to benefit your artistic endeavors. If you've got something else you can do, which is complementary as opposed to just falling back on, I think, if that makes sense to you, then that's what I wish I'd understood when I was younger. Because when people said that to me as a young boy, I just thought, I'll show you, and all I did was funnel all of my energy and intention and focus into becoming an actor. And as I say, I was very lucky because I became one. But if I hadn't have managed to make a career, believe me, I'd be absolutely stumped. And there's been many, many times, including in the last few years, where I've thought, oh God, I need to think about doing something else. And which is fine. I'm more than happy to do something else. The only problem is I haven't ever trained in doing anything else, so I can't do anything else as it stands today. So, yeah, does that all make sense?
Yes, it does. And I'm glad you're not trained to do anything else, because it sort of means that you have to keep acting, which we benefit from, because I want to see you in more things and to keep seeing you on screen and so on. But it is interesting to hear you say this. I had a similar conversation recently with Michael Underwood, the broadcaster, who is terrific. He's a really good broadcaster. He and I have known each other for 1,000 years, and he recently took up teaching because he's married to Angelica Bell. And he sort of said, look, the two presenters and we now have young kids, two presenters, it's not stable. You can't be sure what you're bringing in each month. And it's a challenging situation. When you've got two performers in the family, one of you has to know that they're bringing in X hundred pounds a week or whatever it might be to cover the costs.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm in that situation. My wife is a presenter. Her name's Katie Quilton.
And she's brilliant. She's brilliant.
Yeah, thanks. Oh, thanks. Yeah, she is amazing at what she does. And, you know, so we're both in the same sort of situation, really. But we muddle through and we have faith. We just have sort of a faith that something, I always think it's always going to work out. I'm very much not just a glass half full. I'm just happy to have a glass kind of a frame of mind, to be honest with you. It seems to work so far.
Well, I mean, that's a very encouraging outlook on it. And I mean, do you have kind of, you know, strange moments where you're kind of, you've got that negative voice in the back of your mind going, come on, James, let's look at something else. Or do you maintain that sort of reasonably upbeat focus that actually it's going to be fine?
To be completely honest, I have a deep-seated belief that it's all going to be fine. And that even if all the work dries up and actually I end up not doing this anymore, that whatever I'll be doing, it will be the right thing for me to be doing. I always believe that I get what I'm supposed to get. And that goes with roles. And then if it all dried up, I think I'd be all right. I am interested in other things. I mean, the only problem is, of course, is that we need to earn money in this life. And that's a bit of a bore. But I'm sure I'll find a way.
I love
somehow.
It.
I don't know.
No, this is a very nice. It's so refreshing to hear that, James, because you hear sort of these days, you hear people sort of struggle quite quickly, whereas it sounds like your default is the reverse, actually. It's to go, well, we'll get through it. You know, we'll be all right.
Yeah. 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 I do believe that. I just have this feeling. And I guess, I keep saying this now, but I'm not saying this to be sort of, faux humble or anything like this. I am aware of how incredibly lucky I am. But then with that sort of state of gratitude, I feel that I'm able to kind of sense a bit of magic around that is going to kind of land at some point, and it seems to do that. And a good case in point, for instance, would be for me landing Ted Lasso. I mean, it's just the most remarkable, beautiful comedy, and it's in line with everything that I'm interested in my own sort of personal life, and other than football, actually, which is funny, but you know,
just
in it,
to be fair,
yeah, indeed, you know, but it's, you know, and its themes, and it's kind of it's very kind, and it's never judge a book by its cover, you know, and there's this sort of whole novel of somebody in between those things, and you know, if you look and dig a little further, you'll find there's a bit more to whoever you're dealing with, and I love all of those things, and I that came at a point for me when. Actually, I'd just become a dad, and I thought, I'm going to focus on just being a dad for a minute. Casey was working a lot, and which was great. So that was happening. And I was just sort of hanging out with our little boy, which was amazing. And then suddenly the script arrived called Ted Lasso. And as soon as I heard the title, I thought, I like this. I don't know why, I've got a feeling about it. And I was asked to audition. In fact, my manager in America had said, I'm sending you this. Take a look at it. I think you'd be great for this role. And it's actually the role of Higgins, you know, that Jeremy Swift said. And I said, I read it. I said, you know what? There's no way I'm going to get that role. That's not going to happen. I said, but there's this one scene with this one character called Trent Crimm. And I mean, that name alone, I was like, who's that guy? Trent Crimm. Yeah. And he's got one scene where, you know, he says, is this a fucking joke? Oh, excuse me for swearing. Sorry, you have to bleep that out. I said, do say to the makers of this, I'd be really interested in playing him. It'll only be a day play, but I'd love to play him. There's something about that character. And 6 months later, it came around and they said, no, you're absolutely right with that other role. But yeah, they'd love you to audition for this. And then, I auditioned for it and got it. And then, of course, there was a bit more to Trent Crimm than kind of originally you would see.
I wonder if that's because of you, James. I wonder if it's because, you know, you effectively flagged it up that they thought, well, hang on, this guy, he could come in and actually we could do more with it. Because Trent has become a bigger character, a much bigger character than one scene and making a splash.
Sure.
He's the heartbeat of the show now, alongside obviously Ted and various other characters. He's a prominent role.
Well, he's got, but I think actually, I mean, I'd be more than happy to take credit for it, but it would be wrong for me to do so, because the thing with that team is they really, I mean, and you'll really see this with season two. Season two is incredible. I haven't seen any of it, but I've read it, obviously, and I'm in it. And when I read the first episode of season two, I was like, oh my goodness, these guys are just so on point with this. It's brilliant how they move the characters along. And I think season two is going to be extraordinary, actually. And then, of course, there's season three next year. So it's an amazing ride to be on. But my point with that is that actually what they do with all of the characters is very interesting. They really, really play and investigate the characters, which I guess is the benefit these days of these kind of long form, bingeable series.
Yes. Yes, that's very, very cool. I'm trying to remember, and you forgive me and we've gone down a bit of a Ted Lasso wormhole here, James, but it's a great show, and I will get us back on track in a moment, but while we're there, I want to go down there, because it would mean that you've met somebody who I think is amazing. I'm trying to remember which episode he directed, but I believe Zach Braff directed an episode, didn't he? Did you get
two.
To work with him?
Yeah, man, I absolutely did. I know, and I kind of... Oh, what a dude. I know. I absolutely. It's just kind of looking across, through the eyes of Trent Crim and seeing Zach Braff sat behind the camera, this big, big kind of movie camera. And it's Zach Braff. It's the guy from, Scrubs, which I just adored. I think he's brilliant. And he's a brilliant director.
He's a brilliant
as well.
Director.
Of course
he's a
he is.
Director. Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, he is very, very cool.
You lucky thing. That's the
I know. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And while we're on it though, Jason Sudeikis, if you want to talk about cool dudes, he is something else. He is a gentleman, and his level of detail and his generosity as a comedy player is through the roof. It really is. We did something in a scene the other day, and he said, "How about you try this?" And what he, presented was such a funny idea that it will be in the series now that Trent does, and it's just brilliant. He is mega, and he deserves every accolade that he's receiving, in my opinion.
How lovely to hear that, because it is a show that if anyone listening hasn't seen it yet, if you just need to feel good about the world. Get it on. It's one of those, isn't it? I approached it with a bit of cynicism before the first episode because someone said, "You've got to watch this, you'll love it." And I was like, it's about a football manager who doesn't understand football. Sounds a bit meh. And it's so not that. It was just, so to bring it back to James Lance, because after all, we could talk Ted Lasso forever, but I'd much rather talk about you. You sort of say that so many of the themes and the sort of well-being around that show, the vibes it puts out and so on, are kind of echoed in your own life. And you've also used the word magic. I'd love to pick up on that. Is this sort of quasi-religious belief that you're going on? Is it a sort of vibe that you've lived your life by forever? What sort of beat do you walk to?
Wow, what an interesting question. I'm not religious in any way, but I do believe in something which is the sort of magic of the opportunity of being born and being here. If you look at the stats, apparently the chances of being born are about as likely as a turtle popping its head up in the middle of some ocean somewhere and managing to pop its head up through a life ring. that apparently that's something like the odds of us even being here. So, if you actually kind of let that sink in, which is kind of a bit of a mind blower, then you can't help but feel pretty lucky to be here, for one thing. And then I sort of believe in, intention and, for instance, I kind of have three things that I sort of slightly live my life by at the moment, or my three top values is that I want to be a present father and personal transformation and inspirational comedy. And those three sort of pointers how I'm kind of living my life, really, I think. And so, for instance, Ted Lasso is very much in the inspirational comedy line of thinking, which sort of happened once I realized that's actually where I'm most sort of feeling in line with my heart and in my life. You know, I believe in the power of comedy. Yeah. And the effect of it and the healing nature of it, actually. I think it can be, you know, there's nothing like a really good laugh, is there? And it, the sort of the heart of that, it's got to have some authenticity of the human condition, and that's why it makes you laugh so much. And I think that there's a sort of there is a magic element to a punchline, and when you laugh like that, it is a bit like someone pulling a rabbit out of a hat, and you sort of knew it was in there but you didn't, and then you see it and you go, oh, of course. And and it makes you feel happy to be alive. So I feel very happy doing any kind of inspirational comedy. That's kind of one of my favorite things to do in the world. And then being a dad, you know, it's that's the biggest privilege of my life. I just adore it. I love hanging out with my little boy. And then on the other level, the sort of personal transformation is I'm trying to get as clear as possible in order to sort of spread some light and some joy, to be honest, and be a part of that side of things.
What a lovely statement, James. I mean, I'm a father. I've got three sons, and so I know.
Wow, three, yeah. Three. Hold on, let's not skip over that. Three.
I know.
I don't know how you do that. That's amazing.
It is. Well, the youngest one is only 3 months old. So yeah, it's phenomenal. Thank you. Yeah, no, it's amazing, and I thoroughly recommend it. Although you'll never sleep again. But other than that, yeah. I know exactly where you're coming from in terms of the fatherhood thing. We will absolutely come back to that, because it's transforming. And what are you, 46 now? So you were 43. So quite an old dad to start with.
An old dad,
I mean, that was kindness, because I'm also an old dad. But you know what I mean? We'll come back to that, because I think actually, in a way, although we might not quite have the energy and the legs when we're a bit older for the sports days and stuff at the school, the sort of emotional power that you bring with knowledge and wisdom and so on, I think will more than make up for the lack of physical sprightliness, as it were.
And of course, I hope so. Yeah,
you have the air, which is always brilliant. So let's focus on the inspirational comedy first, because those three things that you planted are too good a seed not to kind of chase up. So inspirational comedy. I find this fascinating, because I look at your career and you've done a lot of straight drama. You've played a lot of heavy-handed roles. You've played a lot of serious people in serious TV shows and grown-up, as it were, you know, grown-up television. But the comedy, which of course is grown-up, but you know what I'm talking about.
The
comedy side is, it's very rare to find an actor who can sustain across multiple comedies and still also play the straight stuff, like in Bronson and Marie Antoinette and so on. But yet, that is such a powerful string to your bow. I mean, Alan Partridge, Space, Teachers, Smack the Pony, Saxondale, Boy Meets Girl, Katie Brand's Big Ass Show. I mean, you've done a lot of it.
Yeah. I have done a lot of comedy, yes.
What is it about how you perform and deliver those lines and cock your head and position your body and so on? How is it that you are able to encapsulate what makes people laugh? Are you aware of it? Is it something intrinsic, or is it something that you've worked on?
Well, it is something I work on, I guess, in the sense that obviously, you know, if I'm in a comedy, then I'll be thinking about, I'm not sure what comes first. I sort of try to just deliver the most truthful sort of presentation of the situation that the character is in with the rest of the other characters. And I think that's my approach. And by doing that, there's also a sort of a bird's eye view of, okay, and where's the funny? Like, you know, just keeping an eye on that, and just really trying to always push that as far as it can possibly go. And I'm very interested in the kind of, I think what it is I'm interested in all facets of comedy. So it's an area and a subject that I think I will always be endlessly fascinated in, and I will never sort of finish with that particular trajectory, because it's impossible to, because, you know, why is something funny? It's kind of, it's a bit of a chicken and egg situation, but you know it when you see it and you feel it when you feel it. And I'm fascinated by the mechanics of it. Do you know what I mean? I guess I'm fascinated by the mechanics of it. So say working with somebody like Steve Coogan or Jason Sudeikis, or, you know, there's so many amazing people out there, or Matt Berry, it's like, I guess I've been around it for a long time, and I watch how they do it, and I'm eternally kind of inspired by that. So I guess somehow I sort of do my own version of that, and does that answer the question?
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. And I realise it was a fairly clunky question, so apologies for that. I mean, looking at this wonderful CV of comedy that you've done, what stands out for you? What's your favourite? If you only had one remote control one night and you had to watch one of your shows for a laugh,
gosh,
what are you putting on?
oh, blimey. Do you know what? Well, I'll say what came into the top of my head just for fun. I think the role that just, there was a small thing I did that just popped in, and it kind of it put me on the kind of casting director's map, which then I guess you put me towards Alan Partridge, was I did an episode in the first series of Absolutely Fabulous.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, playing Safi's boyfriend, yes. Danny. And that was the first time I got to work with the amazing Joanna Lumley. I mean, everybody in that cast, you know, from Dane Horrocks to Jennifer Saunders, to, you know, everybody was brilliant. But Joanna Lumley in particular, I just fell head over heels with her. I was an 18-year-old boy, and we did that episode in front of a live audience at the BBC TV Centre. And Joanna Lumley, by the way, did the warm-up for the audience beforehand, which was hilarious. And, you know, this was before... So when the script arrived and they were calling each other Sweetie Darling and all of this kind of thing, I assumed that these two, Patsy and Edna, were a couple. And that they were, you know, I had no idea it was sort of what the vernacular of it was. I didn't really understand it. All I knew that I had to come in and do my bit. And that was back in the day when you would rehearse at the BBC Centre for it as well, and you'd have these lovely rehearsals with those wonderful characters, and that was wonderful. And then it was performance night when they filmed it, and Joanna Lumley just switched it on. And there's a moment in it where my character Danny takes a sip of his beer when Joanna says, "Hello, Danny." And I literally, and she turned it on for the night. Of course, I thought she was going to do it how she did it for the week, which I was quite used to, but then suddenly she switched it on. And I spilled the beer frothed up and spilled all over the place. And it was a genuine sort of gulp before, like, oh my God. And I was just utterly smitten with Joanna Lumley. I could tell you much more about my stories about with her, because I went on to work with her a few times. So for me, that has a real little place in my heart, because I just laugh at that young boy falling in love with Joanna Lumley.
Too right. I'm trying to work out how old she would have been when you were 18. I mean, it's verging on the Mrs. Robinson, isn't it?
I was more than happy with that.
I would be too. Yeah. Even now. Yeah. I mean, she's amazing.
Even now.
She?
Yeah. Even now. And when you see Leonardo DiCaprio in Wolf of Wall Street, you know, what do you think? Ah, he did well there.
Yes, it's a glorious thing. No, she's a national treasure, isn't she? And wow.
And you know, she, in between scenes, I did with this other series with a called Sensitive Skin, where I actually ended up playing her son in two series of that, which was brilliant. And she would, you'd see her sitting off in the corner in between setups sometimes, literally with a black bin bag of fan letters that she would personally reply to. She replies to every single fan letter she's ever received. She's a wonderful, wonderful human being. And she used to say to me, "Are we going to go and smoke now, Jim?" And I think, "Yes, we are, Joanna. Yes, we are." And then I'd have these little cigarette moments with her outside of the building, and I just listened to her, look up at her telling these amazing stories. Yeah, yeah. Lovely, lovely, lovely human being.
Wow. So is this the sort of education by default through watching people like Joanna Lumley, who are joy spreaders, you know, and actually yeah. just those anecdotes that you've shared with the bin liner, with fan letters and so on, it just sort of speaks to the person, how special and remarkable they are. And you had that as a foundation right at the start of your career. You're watching huge stars effectively showing you this is the way. If you want to behave well, this is the way. Is that part of the reason why you've got this lovely mindset with your personal transformation, with your desire to kind of spread happiness and magic?
I think it probably is, because, you know, somebody like Joanna Lumley doesn't seem to take anything for granted, you know, and everybody is on the, she will treat everybody with the respect and love that you would hope that she would treat, say, the Dalai Lama from whoever, you know. She's just really, she's in that vibration. Every time I've ever met with her and worked with her, she's completely there. And so that definitely was an inspiration to me. I mean, I've obviously worked with people that don't treat people like that, and that doesn't look quite so much fun, and it doesn't look like maybe they're quite so respectful of their situation or other people's. And it was kind of a quite straightforward choice as to how to kind of live my life, I guess, along with those experiences. Yeah,
I mean, it does make me want to sort of press for who that might have been that was a bit unpleasant. I sense that you won't tell me, but if I don't ask, I'm definitely not going to find out. I'm going to put a name to you, and if you defend him, then it won't be him. It's Steve Coogan.
Oh, no, it's not Steve Coogan.
I'm going through the list here, James. I've got a long list here. Yeah. We'll get it by elimination. It's not Coogan. Right? Sure.
It's not Coogan. I think I forget them. They start to evaporate from my mind, the ones that weren't so pleasant, to be honest with you. I don't stick around with them in my mind either. I think, you know, there's no point. I can't actually, honestly, I cannot remember who is probably the most badly behaved human being I've worked with, but I know they're out there. I've met a few, yeah. And but to be honest with you, I find them quite amusing as well. They can be quite fun, you know, being with a real crazy nut job, you know, as well. I might not necessarily want to emulate that behavior, but it's quite fun to be around that again. You know, I don't know if you...
They'll treat you with a degree of reverence anyway, because you'll be on screen with them. So you're talking more about how they behave to the rest of the crew, as it were, and you know.
Yes, and also I've not been treated with reverence in any way, shape, or form either, as well. I don't know if you've ever seen a documentary called My Deaf Fiend, which is Werner Herzog's movie that he made about his relationship with Klaus Kinski.
Okay, no, I haven't.
I recommend it highly. It's brilliant. And Klaus Kinski, you know, was just wild and out there. And I'm fascinated with characters like that. But I would imagine being on set with them could be quite tricky, you know?
Yeah. Yes. I mean, have you had circumstances? Because, of course, we've established a lot of what you've done is comedy. But also you've had some very brutal, kind of very dark scenes that you've had to kind of address. And have you found, because I'm aware that different directors, different productions and so on all have different approaches. I don't know if you've watched the new Lewis Arnold one with Sean Bean in, where he's in prison, that's just started on BBC. But, it, you know, that looks incredibly sort of, this is really hardcore. And you kind of imagine behind the scenes it must be very tense and very fraught. Have you found that there have been occasions where you've walked onto a set and it's just very dark and it's really quite a frightening space to be in?
Yes, I think I have along the way. I want to make a joke and say it was something like 2.4 children, but it wasn't. I'm kidding. It was terrifying. No, I'm just trying to think. I can't remember when it was, but you go to some kind of dark places for sure. I mean, you know, Bronson was an interesting one for me. I played this the art teacher in Bronson with Tom Hardy, which Nicholas Winding Refn directed. And so that whole experience was incredible. And that was before both their careers really, really took off. And just being on that set was pretty wild. But not least because I was playing somebody who, it was based on a real character that had been taken hostage by Bronson in a prison. And I'd seen the CCTV footage of the the attack with Bronson, and you know, there was a line in it where, well, not a line, it was something that the teacher said where he just Bronson's kind of torturing him sort of thing. And he just kind of went, oh, I'm not feeling very well now, Charlie, you know, and it was heartbreaking. And I took that line and put it into the script of the days when Tom, as Charlie, was, you know, kind of being really abusive to my character. And I really was kind of tied up for a few days. And it was quite, you do feel a sort of a responsibility to the character, whether they're real or not, in a way, to sort of, you know, be true to it. So yeah, it does take you to some strange places now and again, for sure.
Yes. Well, that was an incredible movie, and of course Tom Hardy was, I mean, gigantic on the screen, wasn't he? I mean, he was just what a presence. Yeah. It must have been terrifying when he was in character, just sort of being anywhere.
Well, you know, he was in character the whole time as well. No. He was, He pretty much. I mean, a little aside now and again, and I had decided that I wanted to turn up in character as well. So I kind of turned up as this, and I'd made him Scouse as well, because I'd been on a kind of research trip in Liverpool, and where I met some prison art teachers and met some phenomenal people, and decided I was going to kind of do him Scouse. And so I turned up like that, and in order to get away with it, I just thought, I'm just going to turn up speaking like this and no one will say anything, and they didn't. And so I kind of stayed in character pretty much, but Tom was basically, you know, Charlie all pretty much the whole time.
Crikey.
And you know, that was quite a menacing, although I will say we did our first scene together and we hadn't said anything to each other other than what we were, you know, just sort of as in character. And we did the first scene and he turned to me and he just whispered, he went, you're a bit bloody good, ain't you, because you're having on board.
Oh wow. Phew.
And it was and he'd given me a little you know, a little pat on the back there, and then off we went, and it was great. It was amazing. Wow. Amazing experience.
Wow. I mean, I must say though, James, you possibly shot yourself in the foot by kind of having the Scouse accent off camera as well, because of course the director, I mean, if you just walked around with a hammer a little bit, you could have, you know, you could have been wearing the old, I'm of course talking about the film Drive that he went on to do so well. Was it Ryan Gosling? That could have been you if you just sort of expressed an interest in tools.
And instead, I'm on Driven with you, Andy, today.
Well, so, you know,
but you know,
it's close.
Ryan's loss is my gain. Absolutely.
Yeah, we'll get a plank of wood and some nails, and we'll show him what he's missed. We'll have some fun with it. But gosh, yes, that does sound. I mean, an actor's life. Wow, it does sound utterly fascinating, and also a little bit terrifying at times.
Yeah, it was fascinating. I mean, that particular one, you know, we did this day on that where his character was torturing my character for kind of all day long. And I was in tears all over the place, and this, that, and the other. And then at the end of the day, I was in the makeup, getting all my makeup taken off me, and there was all sorts of blood and bits and bobs. And it was Nicholas Finding Refn popped his head through the door. And he said, well done for today. He said, you and Tom, you were great. But we're going to reshoot everything again tomorrow.
Oh, no. Oh,
yeah.
No.
And I was sitting there thinking, whoa, because actually, as far as I was concerned, that was the best day's acting it felt like I'd ever been involved in. And I said, oh, really? And he said, yeah. He said you were great, but you guys were great, but I've seen it all before. And he said, are you okay getting naked? And I was like, yeah. He went, okay, great. See you tomorrow.
Oh my.
And then I had a night thinking, oh no, what's he gonna do? And then the next day he completely had rewritten the scene that night, and then that whole stuff where Tom's character paints my face with the Matisse with the apple and the bowler hat, which came from an improvised line between Tom and I, and he created this completely new scene for it, which is in the movie. And that was really cool to be working with a director who had the kind of ability to move in that way.
Wow. Although I bet you didn't sleep that night thinking,
I did not sleep that night, no. And I was just all night thinking, oh no, right, so okay, so I'm gonna be naked. I mean, you know, is it the end of my career? Yeah. how big is this role, if you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
And
yes.
Yeah, oh
gosh,
god,
yes,
god,
that was,
nightmare.
Whoa. Yeah.
What do you do with that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, did you have a chat with Little James at any point ahead of going on set?
Well, the problem with that situation is Little James is just terrified. So I used to have shrank even more. So I just, I didn't know. I just sort of held on for dear life and hoped the right thing would happen. And it kind of did.
Well, yes. I mean, it was on-screen magic, but goodness me.
It could have not been.
Yeah, it could have been a whole different career. I mean, you could have gone into indeed. A fascinating sideline.
Indeed.
Celebrity porn with James Last.
Indeed. Hi, indeed.
Yeah, let's not do that. That would be strange. James, you seem so sort of... Well, we've never met before. It's our first chat. You just seem like a really lovely guy. I feel the need to sort of say that. I think your vibe is fabulous.
Oh, thank you. Thanks very much. Likewise.
No, it's just, you put out all the right things and you don't often hear that. You know, I wasn't sure what to expect ahead of our chat because, of course, you know, in terms of Wikipedia, etc., you're rather like sure. me. You're as hidden as you can be with your private stuff, which I admire
right.
immensely. But so I wasn't sure
right,
what
yeah.
sort of a guy would answer the phone. You know, I thought, well, I know you've got great hair. You know, and I know you're a cracking actor, but that doesn't speak to your personality at all. You're a very deep thinking, caring kind of guy, aren't you?
Oh, thanks. I have no idea, but I mean. I hope I'm a caring guy. Yeah.
Well, I get the feeling you care about your output. I don't mean your professional
yeah.
output, I mean your output into the world, what you contribute in terms of energy.
Yes, absolutely, 100%. Yeah, definitely. And more and more and more so. Yeah, for sure. There's a lot, I mean, because we're all kind of broadcasters these days, aren't we? There's so much broadcasting going on, you know, like as in with our... I mean, I've chosen not to be on social media, because I just don't personally, I couldn't quite cope with that. It's for me personally, and as I've got older, it seems like a really extraordinary choice. And because, you know, if I say that to a young person, you know, they literally look at me like, "What? You're not on social media? That's bizarre." And but I remember thinking when it came along, I was thinking, "Oh, this probably won't last very long." And how wrong was I?
Just
and
a fad.
But yet. Yeah, but I sort of feel like if I was constantly, this is just me talking personally, if I was constantly thinking about my sort of output like that, I think that would compromise my well-being. I really do think it would do that for me. I don't think I'd cope very well with it. I mean, and especially then, you know, if you get some sort of negative feedback and all that sort of stuff, or you know, say something and you think, oh, maybe I shouldn't say that or whatever. So, yeah, I do sort of, I think I like my output to be within a production and, you know, as a character. And that's sort of what I try and say about the world through the characters that I get to play. That's where I feel most comfortable. And then, I mean, in terms of output, but then on my day to day, it's just I'm hanging out with my family and that's just a joy. So yeah, it's I'm trying to keep life quite simple.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, the simplest things are often the greatest. And yeah, I mean, family is really ultimately the only thing that matters, you know.
Well, yeah, do you know, it's funny you say that, because I was thinking the other day, when I was a young man, I used to look at you know, men and a family man, you know, what you'd call a family man. I think, how can you be a family man? Like, that just looks so boring to me. Like, the idea of being a family man, like, I want to be out, you know, partying and meeting as many women as I can and just sort of just living the life of sort of Errol Flynn or, you know, or a version, you know, a sort of a Suffolk Coast version of that. And Suffolk Coast version of that was living. And then, you know, and you grow up. And you get older and it's like, oh my goodness, like that's the last thing I want to be, is out there partying now, you know. And I just adore being a family man. And that to me is a bit of a revelation, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I had no idea how much I was going to fall in love with our child when he came along. And it was absolutely instantaneous. And like, you know, no one told me that was going to happen. And what that would do. And it did, it just transformed my life completely and utterly, changed everything for me.
Yes, you've put it perfectly. It changes absolutely everything. instantly. I don't know how you had, but I was crying at TV adverts within a couple of days of my first being born, because I'd suddenly this new kind of emotional crikey, what this tap had been turned on, and it completely threw me. I started caring about strangers' kids, you know, as I'd see them playing on their bikes on the street, and I'd be like, oh, I hope they're all right, you know, whereas I wouldn't have even noticed them prior to being a dad.
Absolutely. You know, and then you start thinking of all the mums that have ever been, and that, you know, and I remember, you know, you'd hear this phrase sometimes now and again, oh, I'm just a mum or something. And then when you become a parent, you think, no, there's no such thing as just a mum.
Yeah.
It's like, that's the most important and vital role of any profession or any kind of thing you could do on this planet, really, is to take care of your children and create that an environment for them to grow up, you know, where they're sort of, you know, they can be playful and let the imagination run and safe and cared for and all of those things. But, you know, as we know, as parents, that takes work.
Yes.
I mean, that's quite exhausting. I mean, I say that as a 46-year-old man. It comes to the end of the day, every day with my wife and I and our little boy. I mean, we are completely exhausted. I was thinking on one of these interviews that I'm doing for the film, is that people might say to me, so what are you watching now? And I said to my wife, I was like, what have we watched that we liked or whatever? And she's like, well, just say that you're a parent and you haven't seen it, you know, so you don't see anything. I mean, the only thing I watch is Peppa Pig.
I was going to say, Peppa Pig.
You know, yeah. I mean, which is marvellous, isn't it? And
yes.
and I mean, you know, Daddy Pig, I so relate to him.
Yes, I'm taking on many of Daddy Pig's traits, mostly the waistband, yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. Lockdown doesn't help that either.
No, it doesn't. In fact, the term dad bod is now, it just mocks me daily, and I have to, you know, there it is. That's what it is these days, and that's fine.
Absolutely.
Dad bod times three.
But it was a wonderful thing that happened to me. That, you know, suddenly life doesn't become about you, but it becomes about your children.
Yes,
and then everything changes.
Yes, 100%. Yeah, 100%. And it'll never be the same again. And it's all the better for it. Will you extend? Will you have another? Do you think, or are you settled?
I think we would love to have another. As I say, he's three now, and I think we are just starting to land and think, okay. That's about as far as we've got. And so if we're lucky and we have another one, then yeah, we'd be delighted, of course. We'd be delighted. But I say that with a kind of a slightly a cocked, heavy head, thinking, how are we going to do those nights again? You know, our little boy, bless his heart, he's not a natural sleeper. You know, so we were exhausted.
I can echo your sentiments times three. None of mine are particularly fond of going to sleep or staying asleep. Ever. That's fine. Daddy's always on the night shift, but there we are. Happy days. No, it's all good. James, you've kind of alerted me to the fact, I've just noticed the time, how long we've been chatting for, and we haven't talked me, myself, and Di, and of course that's ultimately the reason I was lucky enough to get you on this show. So
Well, let's do it.
It'd be completely remiss of me not to have a little bit of a chat about it, because that's ultimately what you've got to plug, as it were.
So
I've seen the film, but I hate to be the guy that summarizes plots and things, because I am always afraid of the spoilers. So can you promote Me, Myself, and Di? Because I know how much, you'll know how much you're allowed to say, whereas I don't, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a comedy about becoming who you are meant to be and who you truly really are. And that's, in a nutshell, that's what this is. It's a feel good comedy, basically, and it's starring Katie Clayton, who in itself, the way that she got the role is quite interesting, because she auditioned for a role that a character only had one line, and the producer saw something in her and said, can you take a look at the script and come back in a couple of hours and audition for the lead role? And that's how Katie got the lead role. And she's magnificent in it. She's just all heart. It's a wonderful performance that she gives.
She's a ray of sunshine, James. She smiles endlessly, and it is infectious, actually.
It's really infectious, isn't it? Yeah, you sort of fall in love with her kind of instantly and root for her, which is which is, of course, exactly what you need to do for her character. Yeah, she's wonderful. I think she gives an amazing performance. So, it's a feel-good comedy, really. And I get to play, most of it's set on a holiday camp. And I played a holiday camp owner, a guy called Chris Craven, and who also thinks of himself as an entertainer. And so I got to kind of channel quite a lot of, sort of slightly vaudevillian musical energy, and just sort of got in my own little rocket ship and flew off with that one.
You're like the Caravan Park's Willy Wonka.
That's very good. Yeah, it's very good. Yes, indeed. Yeah, it's exactly what he's like. Yes. Even dresses a bit like him. Yeah, that's it.
No, and there's, I mean, there's lots. What's refreshing is that it's a very. I don't mean this to sound kind of. I don't know how it'll sound, but it's just a. It feels like a classic British comedy. You know what I mean? In that sort of very traditional British sense, of you know the characters are sort of, you know who everyone is quite quickly. You know, yeah. Okay, well, right, Lucy's playing that role.
Yeah.
Tiger Drew Honey's playing that guy. And, you know, there's not sort of, you don't need a lengthy explanation or 20 minutes to uncover who they are. You kind of get them straight away. And that allows the plot to sort of unfold quite fast, which I love about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And then you just enjoy watching without giving, well, no, I don't want to give too much away. But yeah, you enjoy watching Katie, as her story unfolds, I think, in particular. And also Lucy's character as well. It's interesting what happens there, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. No, it's, I mean, and also it's very well timed. I don't know if that was deliberate. I don't know if it was filmed during lockdown and so on. But of course, it is a time when cinemas are finally open again, which is something we've been all waiting for such a long time. And actually, and sort of quite frustratingly, a lot of films are still holding back, you know, the likes of Bond and stuff. You just kind of go, come on, the doors are open. Get the big blockbusters on, you know, give us a reason to get back in the theatres. So it's nice that actually it's going to be available on the big screen as well, because people need a reason to go back to the cinema other than just that it's open, you know?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I hadn't sort of thought of that. And as you were saying that, I was thinking, God, yeah, it's going to be so good to get into the cinema and see this and be in a room full of people laughing. Yeah. I really miss, well, hopefully laughing, you know. I really miss that. I miss that. And particularly with theatre, actually. I just love being in a theatre, you know, when you've got some live comedy going on and being part of that collective laughter. I have really, really missed that during this lockdown, for sure. That would be my, probably the main thing I've missed, actually.
No, I think
is being in a room full of people laughing.
Communal laughter is, you can't beat it.
You can't really beat it, can you? It's a great thing. I saw Stuart Lee perform just before this whole thing happened, and I was literally doubled up over in hysterics at how funny he was. That was at Leicester Square Theatre just before the lockdown happened. Yeah. So it's going to be good to be seeing these people back out there, and, you know, films like Me, Myself and Die. It's going to be good.
Absolutely. Amazing. James, what's next for you? You've sort of referenced Ted Lasso season 2 and season 3, which I hope you will be a part of as well.
Yes, I've been told that I'm a part of season 3, and that starts shooting at the beginning of next year. So that's a wonderful thing to look forward to, and will allay my insecurity of never working ever again somewhat.
That's banked. The diary has something in it. Excellent.
Let me tell you, that's probably the first time in my career that's ever happened.
Oh,
so
cool.
So that's a really nice thing to know that's happening. I've just finished this Oscar Wilde TV thing called The Canterville Ghost, which is also that Anthony Head is in as well. He's in Ted Lasso. And that was amazing fun. But other than that, I don't know what is coming up next. I'm in that place. Yeah, I don't know what I'm going to be doing next.
Well, I hope it's something wonderful, joy-bringing and incredibly exciting. And I hope it happens very quickly.
No, thanks very much. Yeah, thank you. Appreciate that.
James, it's been a real pleasure. Thank you so much for your company. You've been a really, really interesting guy, and I've loved it, actually.
Oh, thanks. Cheers. Likewise, it's been a really, really good chat. And yeah, thanks very much. It's been really good to talk to you, and thanks for being so kind.
The Andy J Podcast.
There you go. Didn't I tell you? Wasn't he lovely? I am a big fan of James Lance, not just his remarkable hair, but he as a person has absolutely enchanted me. What a lovely man. What a fascinating conversation. And his insights into the industry. Love it. Love it. Really chuffed with that. Thank you so much for choosing the Andy J Podcast. Tomorrow, just for you, Mr. Harry Redknapp. Oh yes, Harry Redknapp's on the show tomorrow. So make sure you subscribe so you don't miss a second. See you tomorrow.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.